On this episode of Still Loading, the history of RDS, part one. Hello, everyone, and welcome to this new episode of the Still Loading Podcast. I am your host, Josh Koval. Today, we are kicking off a new series on the show, and it is going to be about the history of the RTS genre of games. These episodes will be released as the second mini episode for each month. For those who don't know what RTS games are or what RTS stands for, RTS stands for real-time strategy, and probably the two biggest examples of games slash series in this genre are StarCraft and Age of Empires, and you can throw original Warcraft in there as well, though now obviously Warcraft is known for World of Warcraft. Most RTS games have players starting at a singular base slash town, creating workers to gather resources, and then in turn using those resources to build armies and attack enemies. All of this is done in real time, hence the name. But before we really dive into this, let's lay out some groundwork. You see, there's a lot of subgenres under the large umbrella of strategy games, and probably the other popular subgenre is turn-based strategy games, i.e. Advance Wars, Fire Emblem, Final Fantasy Tactics, etc. Some of these games may be referenced over the course of this series. I'm not sure, though. I haven't written all these episodes yet, but it will not focus on them. Another subgenre of strategy games that's probably the most related to RTS games would be RTT games, otherwise known as real-time tactics games. These kinds of games are also not the focal point of this series, but they will show up more often as both they and RTS games share a lot of the same roots in history. The important thing to mention about them right now, though, is how RTT games differ from RTS games. RTS games, like I mentioned before, involve players building bases, creating workers, gathering resources, building a military, and then controlling that military in battles. RTT games only focus on the battle aspect, not the resource collection or the economy. And one final point to mention before we continue, I've tried to find the earliest examples of games that have RTS elements in them, but this does not mean they are the first games to use the mechanics I'm talking about. I wouldn't be surprised if the oldest game I found during research is not actually the first game with RTS roots. If there are any RTS enthusiasts out there that would like to send in any corrections, seriously, please do so. If I do get any, I will make sure to include those corrections in future episodes. You can email any corrections to stillloadingcontact@gmail.com or hit me up on any of the social medias, Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram @stillloadingpod on all of them. Now that we have the groundwork laid out, let's dive in. The earliest example of a game that I could find that had RTS elements in it is called War of Nerves. War of Nerves was released in 1979 for the Magnavox Odyssey 2, and for those who don't know what the Odyssey is, you're not alone. Most people have not heard of the Odyssey consoles. The original Magnavox Odyssey is actually considered the first home console, but that's besides the point. The Odyssey 2 is part of the second generation of consoles, and its main competitors at the time were Intellivision, ColecoVision, and the famous Atari 2600. So it really didn't stand out too much compared to the other consoles that were out at the time. In War of Nerves, two armies appear on screen, the Army of Northwestonia and the Army of Southwestonia. Each army consists of a general and four soldiers, or they could be robots, I'm not really 100% sure. These two armies fight in real time, and the match is decided when one of the generals is captured by the opposing team. To capture the opposing general, one of the soldiers must touch the enemy general, and they will instantly surrender. You can only control your own general, and your four soldiers are controlled by the computer. When the action button is pressed, you can tell the soldiers to follow the general's lead. However, you cannot control when your soldiers fire. The only thing in your control is the general's movement and sometimes the soldiers. As a general, you can revive your own fallen comrades by walking over them. But you need to be careful because that could leave you exposed for enemy soldiers to come and capture you. The first to 10 wins. The battlefield's landscape changes with each match. On screen, a random assortment of trees appears and the layout of them will change from game to game. The soldiers cannot move through these trees at all. However, the general can, albeit at a bit slower of a speed. The graphics are about on par for what was out at the time, simple shapes, single color sprites, etc. And while this game is definitely not an RTS, it does have some elements of what would become the RTS genre. It's a strategy game that occurs in real time, where you control individual units to win a battle. It does not have the resource gathering, and you can only control one unit fully, but you can still see the beginnings of what would later become the RTS genre. Just a year later, though, in 1980, there was a game released called Sea Battle, and this was for the Intellivision. In Sea Battle, you could control your individual units. Sea Battle is a multiplayer game where two players go head-to-head in real-time naval warfare. Each player has a home port that they need to defend. The home ports also spawn various types of units for the players to control. The players have eight different types of ships to choose from when they're building their navy. Aircraft carriers, troop transports, battleships, destroyers, submarines, PT boats, mine layers, and minesweepers. Each boat has different attributes. Some have high defense but low attack and speed. Some have high speed and attack but low defense. And others are more well-rounded with decent stats in all categories. Players can have up to four fleets on screen at a time, with each fleet consisting of three ships. However, players can only create a maximum of 13 ships total. So if a player creates four fleets of two ships each, that would leave them with five ships left to create new fleets with if the others get destroyed. Moving ships around the map can be tricky, as players can only control one ship slash fleet at a time, and if they are ordered to move, they will continue to move unless directed to stop or they run into something else. If enemy ships come in contact with each other, they will both flash on screen, and if either of the players decide, they can initiate a battle. If two fleets start battling, the screen will change to a close-up view of the area where the two fleets met. From here, players can control individual ships that make up their fleet and try to shoot and destroy the enemy's ships. And unlike in War of Nerves, you can control where the ships aim and when they fire. Victory is achieved when an aircraft carrier or a troop transport makes it to the enemy's port. If there is neither of those, then it's whichever ship is available. What stands out to me about this game is the ability to customize your army composition, as well as being able to control your individual units in battles, which is a huge upgrade to War of Nerves. It's also interesting that the HUD you would normally see in modern RTS games that shows the commands for individual units and buildings were delegated to the Intellivision controller. Since the Intellivision controller had 9 buttons, it allowed the designers to map out the unit creation actions to multiple buttons. The game also came with an overlay that showed the commands for each of the buttons. I'll include a link of the picture of the overlay used in this game in the episode description. The entire month of May here on Still Loading has been sponsored by Geek Guilt. Geek Guilt is the go-to shop for all of your geeky needs. You know I'm a retro gamer, and I personally love their selection of NES games. And right now, they have a deal going on, where if you buy a pair of headphones and a mod mic, you will get a discount on both of them. So go to geekguilt.com and check out everything they have to offer. The final game I'm going to talk about for this inaugural episode in my history of RTS series is called Utopia. Utopia was designed by Don Daglow for the Intellivision and was released on June 3rd, 1982. Utopia is considered to be one of the earliest games in the God game genre. God games are a type of genre where players can use different game mechanics slash abilities to influence a population of sim people. Utopia is actually a two-player game, but there is no computer AI. In the game, there are two islands that are each governed by a player. Players are responsible for increasing the population of their island and making them as happy as possible. When starting a new game, players can choose how many rounds the game will last, which is up to 50, and how long each round will last, 30 to 120 seconds. During each round, players need to obtain resources so they can build farms, houses, factories, and more to help the population grow and keep them happy. Players obtain resources by having their one fishing boat, yes, only one, to collect fish from schools of fish that appear on screen, which there is actually only two at any given time. They can also obtain resources whenever it rains on the crops they plant. However, the weather in the game is random, so it's not always the most reliable source of income. The players would also have to worry about rebels. If the happiness level on their island got too low, rebel factions would pop up and that would make it harder for them. There are also pirate raids you had to contend with. There's also major weather storms you had to deal with. So there was a lot of stuff going on, and it was all in real time. The winner is determined by which civilization is the happiest at the end of all the rounds. The origin of the game is kind of interesting, too. The designer of it, Don Daglow, was approached by Mattel to design a new game for the Intellivision, but he wanted to do something different to help the game stand out. You see, back then Atari had a lock on the arcade game market, or action game market, and Intellivision was basically the sports game king. So Don had to draw from a number of influences to make Utopia. His first that he references are sim games. When Don was in college, he went to one of the few schools that had a big mainframe computer, so him and his friends could actually make games on it. And some of the most popular games among that group of friends were sim-style games. The second influence he cites came from when he was a teacher. In the cafeteria of the school he taught at, he noticed the floor had perfectly square tiles. He used the tiles as a type of measuring tool, and he would use tape to map out a design of the world on the floor, which he used to help teach his students social studies and history. He wanted to find a way to use that map of the world idea from school in a game, but the resolution on the console, the usable resolution, was very low, only about 96 pixels high by 128 wide. So he scrapped the full world map idea in favor of two islands. And that islands idea came from a game he designed back when he was in college on that computer mainframe that I mentioned before. And this was called Attack of the Killer Shrews, which was based off of a movie of the same name. The premise was that there were six people stuck in a cabin with radioactive killer shrews outside. The player had to help people safely make it to the boat that was on the other side of the island while also managing resources to make sure the inhabitants didn't starve or using those resources to distract the shrews. So to recap so far, his influences are sim games and the world map slash island shrew game. His third and final influence was also a game he played on that mainframe computer in college, and it was called Santa Paravia en Fumacio. Don't know if I pronounced that correctly. I apologize. I will have the full spelling in the notes. But this game was a city building slash management game. And now Santa Paravia didn't have a lot of graphics. It was mostly a game played through text prompts and menus, but players were responsible for managing the amount of grain available to their city as well as their funds. The objective was to grow the Italian city-state that you are put in charge of until it's large enough until you can be a king or queen. Now, Utopia is considered the earliest ancestor of the RTS genre. The games I mentioned before definitely have elements of RTS in them, but what makes Utopia different is the speed in which the players must make decisions and the multitasking required to play the game. In War of Nerves and Naval Battle, you only really need to focus on your units. In Utopia, you have to manually control your fishing boat while also building houses and factories and farms, and similar to modern RTS games, you have to manage your economy and a military. Utopia makes you manage your income and population. And this is actually where I'm going to put a pin in this deep dive into RTS history. Like I said in the beginning, these may not be the first games that have RTS elements, but they were the earliest that I could find. I'm really looking forward to continuing this series and going over more aspects of the RTS genre with you. I also hope to fit more than three games in an episode. Looking ahead, there's actually going to be a lot more. And actually looking at the time of how long I've been recording, this was about a 4.5 page, like a 3.5, almost 4 page long script, and it only took, I'm at 19 minutes now, but there's going to be a lot of editing because there's a lot of flub, so who knows what the final count will be. But in any case, I'm putting a pin in it now, and I'm really looking forward to all the games I have to talk about going forward. So if you like this series, let me know, because I'm enjoying it so far. In any case, thank you all so much for listening. As usual, you can find me on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at StillLoadingPod on all of them. If you want to contact me, you can reach me on any of those social media things I mentioned, as well as email me, stillloadingcontact@gmail.com. If you want to support the show, there's a number of ways you can do that, giving it a 5-star rating and review on any podcasting app that you use, preferably Apple Podcasts, because that seems to be like the number one provider, but any app that you use is definitely helpful because it helps people find the show. And if you want to support it monetarily, you can go to patreon.com/stillloadingpod. Even just $1 a month will help grow the show. And I'm actually working on revamping the tier benefits for that because I just got a new patron. Shout out to my buddy Kev In. He subscribed at the $5 level, so thank you, Kev. And for any new patrons, if you want to get a shout on an episode, I will shout out new patrons on episodes. Unless it is already been pre-recorded, but I will promise you, I will shout it out on the very next episode I record after I see the subscription. So in any case, the final thing I have to mention is the most important shout out, the Bit by Bit Foundation. The Bit by Bit Foundation is a nonprofit organization whose mission is to put video games and video game consoles in the hands of children receiving inpatient care at hospitals and children's hospitals. So if you want to support them, don't bother with my Patreon. Go to bitbybitfoundation.org and donate to them because it goes to a good cause. In fact, right before recording this, I saw they donated a whole Oculus set and some games to a hospital so kids going through physical therapy could have a more fun time doing it. So bitbybitfoundation.org, check them out. That will do it for the inaugural History of RTS Games episode, series, whatever, of the podcast. Thank you all for listening, and I will see you all next time.